Yo, what up? This is D-Knight, and you're listening to the Pardon the Interaction podcast. It's Pocket Pard time, baby. You know what it is. Of course, look, every time I cut this fucking microphone on, there's been some insane developments over the course of the political landscape and all across the news, and it's just, it's never shocking. It's never surprising, but it's always shocking just the extent of the insanity that is constantly taking place in politics in America. But look, what can you do? What can you do but tweet about the shit and try and record a podcast and hope at the end of the day you make some kind of difference sharing your thoughts and opinions and informing people of the various events taking place and hoping it works out for the best. But before we get to all of that, of course, we got to give our obligatory shout out to Sheets and Giggles. This is a Sheets and Giggles podcast. We don't sleep on anything less than the best because, quite frankly, with the content that we cover here on this podcast, it should be stressing us out, man. It'd be impossible to get some sleep damn near anyway. But at least if you're going to be lying awake at night, tossing and turning in emotional misery, you can at least be physically comfortable. And you can do that by getting you some sheets from sheetsandgiggles.com. By the way, we have a link in the show notes for you to grab a discount courtesy of Pardon the Interaction. So go ahead and do that. Make your life a little bit better, at least in the tiny instances in which you find that possible. So, of course, on to the news. Last week was eventful, to say the least. I think we'll start off with the State of the Union address. Biden presented a masterclass on not only one, how to be president, two, how to command the moment, three, showing the media that all of this coverage of his inability to do the job because of his age or some perceived level of cognitive decline was faulty, and four, yelling at the people who need to be yelled at because dudes is out here tripping, including the Supreme Court, Republicans, his predecessor, as he alluded to a number of times during the speech. Masterclass. The first, 7, 8, 9 minutes of that State of the Union, while I don't necessarily particularly find the entirety of it to be the best State of the Union address I've ever heard, that first good 10-minute chunk of it will likely go down in history, or at least, depending on how things go here in November. Yeah, should our democracy survive? People will look back at that speech as the beginning of the end of the Republican Party, or, at least as far as this current version of it, should Biden go on to win in November. And again, it's not that I'm super Biden fanboy over here. I mean, I root for the dude, obviously, but also he has legitimately done a fantastic job and deserves praise. But if I were to pick his finest moment, it would easily be 2021, his very first State of the Union address after beating Donald Trump in the 2020 election, not long after January 6th, and a very alarming and disheartening impeachment trial of Donald Trump and his attempt to overthrow the government on January 6th. After all of that, the middle of the pandemic, people forget that, like, we were knee deep in the oncoming apocalypse of the possibility that millions of Americans might die thanks to this novel virus and the economy might shut down. And how the entire global economy on the verge of collapse, like, things were looking very grim, circumstances were dire, and that man got up there in front of the nation and delivered a speech from the ages. Not only did he hit all the right notes, I mean, the guy is just, like, at the end of the day, President Biden is really just a good dude who cares. And it comes across in all of the things that he says and all of the things that he does. And he channeled a level of empathy and insight and compassion and caring into that speech while also being stern and hopeful in a way that very few other individuals in the history of our country could have. It was impressive. Again, to this day, what I believe to be his finest moment. Go ahead and crack open the YouTube. check out the first few minutes of that. If you get nostalgic, it will remind you of how he even won in 2020 in the first place. He was the dude from the time he met the moment. And I'm sure over the course of the 2024 presidential campaign, he will continue to meet the moment. Also, we had a response to the State of the Union address from this crazy bitch down in Alabama. I'm sure you thought that it couldn't get much worse than Auburn's own former football coach, Tommy Tuberville, who is somehow representing the state of Alabama while living in Florida. I don't know how that's possible, but I mean, that's where we're at. You thought it couldn't get any crazier than this, dude. You were wrong. You were wrong. Well, the Republican Party decided that Katy Britt would be the venue for delivering the GOP party's response to Biden's State of the Union address. And if you haven't heard by now, it was fucking bonkers. I actually don't even know where to start with it because it was that wild. Like, if you think I'm exaggerating about the degree of insanity contained in this, you know, 40 minute monologue, or however long it was, I don't know. At first I had, like, her voice was so, and I hate to do this, like, to talk about the way women sound in a derogatory fashion, because typically that is used by a misogynist in a way that's not necessarily entirely representative of that. But, like, you know, they tend to call women shrill or annoying or whatever, and that the person that they're referring to not actually be shrill or annoying in any fashion. This is just like, it's a dog whistle, a sexist dog whistle. Well, no, in this case, if you go ahead and cut on the tape and listen to her extremely annoying voice, you will understand what I mean.
Under his administration, families are worse off. Our communities are less safe. And our country is less secure. I just wish he understood what real families are facing around kitchen tables just like this one. Our country can do better. And you don't have to look any further than the crisis at our southern border to see it. President Biden's border policies are a disgrace. This crisis is despicable. And the truth is, it is almost entirely preventable.
And I just, wow, it was bananas. And she spoke in a manner which would lead you to believe that, like, she has psychological problems. You know, not that I'm one to necessarily diagnose someone off of 10 minutes of them speaking publicly, but it was rather insane. Also, like, her affect did not match the content of her words. But I think one of the things people have latched on to over the course of the weekend is the fact that she brought up an incident in which she had met a woman who had been supposedly violently raped by the cartels and was blaming that incident on the Biden administration. Well, in fact, the incident she was referring to did actually happen, but not in America. It happened in Mexico, and it happened 20 years ago. That's right, during the Bush administration. So it seemed as though a number of media outlets finally picked up on that. There was a independent journalist whose name I cannot recall off the top of my head, which I would love to credit. I'm sorry, I'm doing this with no notes whatsoever. As an aside, if you'd like to know, so originally when we started doing this podcast, I would take copious amounts of notes for the entirety of the podcast and myself and the co-host, so that we could kind of deliver the information, because it was like densely packed factual information from investigative materials such as the January 6th committee and, you know, the Department of Justice investigations into Trump's attempt to overturn the election and the Florida documents case. And while I do still tend to take some level of notes, you know, we've been trying to do things a lot more unscripted. And that's largely in order to widen my skill set as a host and to create a bit of a more free flowing conversational manner of delivering information. And that's not to say one is better than the other, just building a skill set here. Anyway, so So Katie Britt's batshit insane, and she's also a liar. And we've had a lot of fun on the internet about that. I mean, of course, I'm sure it was one of the most anticipated Saturday Night Live sketches in quite some time. It's also funny that, like, the Republican Party tends to pick these insane people to deliver the rebuttal to Democratic presidents, and then often it ends their political careers. Or, you know, at least it puts a ceiling on their careers. Like, they're never the same afterwards. You know, they go on to, like, become a governor of a state and then end up in some kind of scandal for, you know, multi-thousand-dollar podiums or something. That completely tanks the rest of their careers, and then they're never heard from again. Fun times. I'm sure the same thing will happen to Katie Britt. She was a star who flashed across the sky brightly and then faded into obscurity, and we'll all have, like, good times laughing and recollecting on her State of the Union rebuttal, you know, 8 years or 6 years from now in the middle of the Harris administration, pretty sure. Regardless of that, we had a number of other developments over the course of the week and the weekend. So Donald Trump finally secured his bond for the $83 million decision in the E. Jean Carroll suit for a total of, you know, a little over $90 million. I think there are a number of fascinating things about this. One, we can start with, well, who did Trump secure the bond from? This company called FIC is basically a subsidiary of Chubb Insurance Group, which is probably a more prominent name that people might be familiar with, at least in terms of the financial community. I think a few of the noteworthy things about why particularly Chubb was interested in making this deal to post a bond on behalf of Donald Trump begin obviously with the CEO. Now, that man's name is Evan Greenberg. You know, he is the son of a famous financial dude, Hank Greenberg. His name is actually Maurice. I don't even know where the Hank nickname comes from, but sometimes that's very confusing if you're looking at maybe some documentation of endeavors of Greenberg, where you're like, oh, who's this Hank guy, when you see Maurice everywhere. I don't know. Sure, there's a story behind that. Don't particularly care. It's not the most interesting part. What I do find fascinating about this is that we can only assume that this decision by FNC to ensure Trump's bond was delivered from the top down. And in this case, you know, you might be thinking, huh, where might I know an Evan Greenberg from? Well, for one, he is a vocal critic of Donald Trump in numerous instances here. Say, for instance, his immigration policy. He was a very vocal critic of him during the COVID times and such. But also, he somehow managed to get a job during the Trump administration. One of the few appointments focused on COVID recovery who actually had, like, some experience in financial institutions. But more importantly than that, one of the things he did in his off time, and you'll never believe this because I couldn't fucking believe it either. It's actually asinine how convoluted Trump world is that we have these connections. But one of his previous endeavors was to sit on an advisory board for the Center for the National Interest. And if you don't know what that is, because our podcast isn't that old, the Center for the National Interest featured prominently in none other than Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report. Up until the release of that report, we hadn't really had any publicly available information about Trump's involvement with CNI. But there was one individual who was featured so prominently in Mueller's report that I think his name showed up over 150 times or something insane like that. An individual of Russian descent who had been living in America since, I believe, the 70s, whose name is Dmitry Symes. Yeah, that guy. So you've got Evan Greenberg, who was sitting on the advisory board. His dad, Maurice, was sitting on the board of directors. And Dmitry Symes was running the place. Probably a Russian asset who was very very integral in Trump's foreign policy plans during the 2016 campaign, and also integral in connecting Jared Kushner with another group of individuals who were likely to be Russian agents. You know, the group that he was seeking the secret back channel with during the 2016 campaign, as they were inviting Russians into Trump Tower, trying to get dirt on Hillary Clinton, this guy. We'd all been saying, given the likelihood of Trump's dire financial situation, one of our geopolitical adversaries were likely to swoop in and bail him out and make sure that he would have the funds to post this bond so that his companies weren't very likely to liquidate all of their assets, with Trump filing bankruptcy and potentially tanking whatever small chances he has of winning the 2024 election. And here we are. A guy in charge of a multi-billion dollar insurance company swooping in at the last minute to bail Trump out, who also happens to be connected to Russian agents who were under investigation by Robert Mueller in the beginning of Trump's first administration. It's absolutely fucking wild. And people are going to point to the fact that Chubb Group has a Russia branch, but like a lot of these institutions, especially finance and insurance, also have branches in Russia. It's not totally out of the ordinary. What is very out of the ordinary is that Trump couldn't get anybody to secure this bond, and then this guy swoops in at the last second and has ties to the fucking Mueller report. Like, of all the things you can't possibly let happen if you're in the Trump inner circle, is letting this dude show up to court with an agreement for someone else to post his bond form who's connected to the Russia investigation. You just can't let that happen. Like, counterintelligence eyes are all over this, I'm sure. Not to mention the fact that just like somebody can swoop in and buy a potential future president, well, also former president, for $90 million is fucking insane. Like, it's insane. It's off the rails. Like, where people are in Alabama talking about finding Willie's taking a $3,500 trip. Some dude just bought Trump for $90 million, potentially saving his company from going broke. And this is why. And no one's asking any questions either. The media's just like, all right, well, he posted a bond. And that's not entirely accurate either. So Trump has only proposed the bond, right? Like, he's notified the court that, hey, I've secured this bond. These are the conditions under which we're offering this bond arrangement. It's still on E. Jean Carroll and Robbie Kaplan, her lawyer, to accept the bond. And there's going to be a hearing in court tomorrow. I love you. Right. So it's entirely possible that, like, whatever arrangements the Chubb has made with Trump aren't suitable to Robbie Kaplan's liking, or E. Jean Carroll for that matter. And it's also entirely possible that Kaplan's going to do some digging, look into the nature of where this money is coming from and how much of Trump's assets he had to use to secure this. Because I feel like we're going to dig into whatever this arrangement is with Chubb and find that Trump committed more crimes, right? Because he's already on the hook in New York civil court for $450 something million that's coming due in a couple of weeks here, for inflating the value of his assets on financial disclosure forms. What kind of fucking disclosures did he make to Chubb? Did he commit more fraud? Like, who the fuck knows, right? You know, also typically in these types of situations, Trump would be forced to either put up money or put up assets up to the value of his bond to secure it, in order to have, in this instance, Chubb Group post a bond on his behalf. Like, did he have to do that? Like, is Chubb requiring him to use financial assets to secure the bond? Did he have to pay the 10% fee that typically these companies require of individuals securing a bond of this nature? Like what kind of arrangement is this? Like, we really need to know. Like, this is potentially indicative of yet another issue where our national security could be threatened, because Trump is on the hook for a massive amount of money in an arrangement we have no idea about, to people who are, like, I know typically Chubb Group is held in high regard, but, like, also the CEO was potentially involved in some shady shit with the Trump administration as early as 2016 is out of control, man. Out of control. Whew. Every day, man, it's out of control. Like, I'm pulling my hair out. You know, you may not be able to tell from my Twitter picture, but I basically had like an afro a couple of weeks ago, and I pulled so much of my hair out now that I have a fade. Yeah, it's that wild. Yeah, so we're going to be looking forward to however things develop in the E. Jean Carroll suit over the course of the next few days here. We've got a number of crazy things to keep an eye out on. Also, it's official. Laura Trump is now the co-chair of the RNC, which means, you know, given that we're headed into a 2024 election, and if it's anything like 2020, you're going to need like $1 billion to come out ahead. And currently the RNC is practically broke, and Laura Trump is talking about spending whatever remaining funds they have defending Trump in court. So that's a fantastic use of what limited funds you already have, given that you've got like, I don't know, a number of senators up for election who you need to win in order for the Republicans to win back the Senate. And I'm not rooting for that, but I'm just saying from their perspective, some fairly important shit. If you're a Republican and you care about, I don't know, like the appointment of judges and whatnot, you know, say a Supreme Court seat becomes open, a seat or two over the course of the next 2 years for various reasons. If you're a Republican and there's a Democratic president and you want to perhaps block that like you did with the last couple seats here, you're going to need the Senate to do that. And you're probably not going to be able to if things go horribly awry in November. And, you know, by horribly awry, I mean you don't have money to fund no fucking campaigns. Also, just based on redistricting alone, Republicans are likely to lose the House. And I guess you could just resign yourselves to your fate when it comes to trying to control the House of Representatives. And that's one option. You know, if I was a Democrat, I would prefer Democrats not do that. But if you're a Republican and your party ain't got no money, you don't really have a lot of options in that department. So it's time. I guess they're assuming that they're willing to lose control of the House. The majority is slim as it is. Shit, they might even lose it before the election. Who knows? Who knows what could unfold between now and election day? And things are looking, well, they're looking rather dire from a financial perspective as far as Trump goes, the Trump campaign, as well as the RNC. And now you got Laura Trump in there ready to bleed that bitch dry, right? Because, you know, now that it's being run by the Trump family, you know, a family notoriously known for running a casino into the ground, running a university into the ground, you know, not that it was a legitimate university, but that's a whole nother issue in its entirety. Running a charity into the ground, running a Trump organization into the ground 6 times, I believe he filed for bankruptcy. like, this ain't boding well for the GOP. And from another perspective, like, it's one thing to have an RNC that's dedicated to propping up Trump. It's another thing entirely to put a family member in charge of that. And then, like, the public can see this for the sham that it is. Like, dude's supposed to be a billionaire. Why is your family out here using an RNC to fundraise for your legal defense? Like, an actual GOP / MAGA voters are paying attention to that. And they not going to want to send the RNC no money. Because if they wanted to send Trump money, they would just donate to his campaign. They have that option. Well, luckily for Democrats, Biden's got over like $120 million in the bank. And after the State of the Union address, the Biden campaign raised like $10 million more in 24 hours. A record number. So where Trump is having a, like, round up hundreds of millions of dollars just to keep his fucking businesses afloat, Biden is bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars to win the 2024 election. From the looks of things, he's probably going to do it. Calling it now. And if he doesn't, the state of our union is fucked. And that concludes this episode of Pardon the Interaction.